This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Children will inherit this climate-damaged world. How are they coping with the record disasters already hitting so many countries? A new study gives us clues. The paper, Trajectories of Post-Traumatic Stress in Children After Natural Disasters, looks at school kids in the U.S. where four major hurricanes wrought havoc. The lead author is Betty Lai, Assistant Professor in Counseling, Developmental and Educational Psychology at Boston College in Massachusetts. Betty has been working and publishing on this key question for more than a decade. Dr. Betty Lai, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex. It's great to be here.
What are the questions your new study attempts to answer?
So in our new study, we're really trying to understand how can we better intervene early to help children after disasters? Because we know that children can report a lot of mental health distress after disasters, and that this can affect many millions of children. So we really don't have the resources to intervene in an intense way for every single child, and it doesn't make sense to do so. So we're really hoping to understand, well, how can we triage the children who need the most care quickly and then offer more supportive interventions for children who may not need that sort of intense level of care?
Yes, but children of the southern states have lived through hurricanes for centuries. Are we just becoming aware of what kids go through?
I think there's the combination of becoming more aware, but also having better tools to help children deal with these stressors. Because we know definitively that children who are exposed to disasters are likely to report mental health distress, but even physical health symptoms and also problems with learning in school.
It's surprising and maybe a bit disturbing that your survey found younger kids can be more deeply impacted than teens. Talk to us about that, Betty.
Sure. You know, I think it's definitely disturbing, but not so surprising when you step back and think about what these results mean. So younger kids, they really have less of a context for understanding what a big event like a disaster means in their lives. Older kids who are teenagers, for example, they've just had more of life to live. So they've had more years where they might not have experienced a big disaster event. And in contrast, younger kids, a disaster when it strikes takes up more of their life. So if you have an 8-year-old who experiences a disaster event, they just haven't lived as long and they don't have that abstract reasoning developed yet to understand what a huge event like this means in terms of what your future life will be like, the purpose of an event, and what how you can understand the meaning of life afterwards. But in addition to that, really young kids also have fewer coping skills that they've developed in life, and they're even more reliant on adults and other caregivers to protect them in these events.
One point about how we talk about all this, are psychologists now calling these stress impacts PTSS instead of PTSD, which the public knows?
It's not that psychologists have changed the term. It's just a distinction in terms of naming it, because PTSD really refers to the clinical diagnosis. So you have to meet a certain threshold of symptoms, but PTSS, it refers to PTS symptoms. So more understanding the full continuum of symptoms and how that might affect children. So for example, in our study where we're looking at post-traumatic stress symptoms rather than just the disorder, we're looking at all of the different types of symptoms that children might report. So that could include things like having flashbacks to the event, avoiding any reminders of the disaster itself. You know, it could be things like taking a new route home after school so that you don't get reminded of things that you witnessed during the disaster event. But the distinction is post-traumatic stress symptoms cover the whole spectrum of symptoms you could report, but PTSD refers to the diagnosis.
And This all happens in the context of climate change, which you mention in the paper. Scientists I talk with indicate we're not sure if the number of hurricanes will increase with climate change. What they do say is, and this matters for the paper, is the number of extremely violent storms will increase, and they may be stronger than anything we've seen before. And rising seas will also increase death and damage in coastal cities like Miami, where you are today. How do you see the relationships between climate change and this ongoing effort to identify kids who need help?
Alex, I think you really hit this issue on the head with talking about intensity. And it's really about the intensity of what children experience that seems to matter in terms of children's mental health distress. So what we know is that the number of stressors that children are exposed to during a disaster event can help us predict which children are likely to report these post-traumatic stress symptoms. So a child who sees rising floodwaters, who has windows break in their home, who might have a tree fall in their home or witnesses fires or sees somebody get injured, those are the children who we know will be more likely to report post-traumatic stress symptoms. And unfortunately, it's not just post-traumatic stress symptoms. We also see children report depression symptoms, anxiety symptoms after these disaster events. So that's why the intensity piece matters in terms of thinking about children's mental health, that the more intense a disaster is, the more likely it is that a child will experience stressors during and after the event.
Well, many children already feel unsafe with food insecurity, housing insecurity. A few are already homeless. Kids may lack medical care and so on. How does that affect those disadvantaged kids when a catastrophic hurricane strikes?
Children who were disadvantaged before disaster are even more likely to experience all of those stressors I just mentioned. And that's the way in which we see systematic vulnerability make children even more vulnerable. So a child who experiences homelessness, they're more likely to be in a temporary housing situation where they might see impacts on their home during a disaster, but they're also more likely to have to move several times after the disaster itself or change schools. And all of those stressors really compound to increase the likelihood that children will experience mental health symptoms after a disaster.
And what did these surveys of about 1,700 kids after disasters find out about minorities and people of color?
That's a great question. And unfortunately, you know, we really didn't have the direct data on racism or systemic injustice. We didn't have those measured directly in our studies, so we can't speak directly to this point. But we know across the disaster literature that all of these factors are systemic vulnerability issues because they do cause children to be exposed to more stressors.
And you found females were slightly more likely to have lasting damage than males. Any ideas why?
You know, this is an issue that we see often in research on children's mental health, that girls are at slightly higher risk of reporting post-traumatic stress and depression. And there could be many reasons why. We're not sure why in our study, but it's definitely something to look into further.
And although we may not have all the studies we'd like, would it be your assessment as a psychologist that other natural disasters from wildfires to floods could also have lasting impacts on some children?
Yes, absolutely. And we see that both in our work and the work of other researchers, that all of these disaster events do have impacts on children. And when we follow children out, you know, we can see those symptoms lasting as long as 2 years, 3 years, and beyond post-disaster. And sometimes the only reason we don't have a better sense of how far out those symptoms go is just because the research wasn't funded to have even more long-term assessments, so researchers weren't able to go back at 10 years, for example. But we do see these symptoms across many types of disaster events, including, as you said, wildfires and floods.
Yeah, a few years ago, you co-authored a study looking at post-traumatic stress in children after bushfires and after the wildfires in California and Canada. Listeners do want to know about that. Would it be your assessment as a psychologist that, what did you learn about wildfires in kids?
Well, you know, one of the major things for listeners who are listening right now that we know as adults is really asking children about how they're feeling is important. And, you know, sometimes adults don't want to ask children directly, how are you feeling? And they're afraid that asking children might uncover or unearth feelings that might make them worse. But we don't find that to be true. What we've found in our work and the work of others is that children mostly feel relieved when you ask them how they're feeling. So it's important to check in with children, ask them how they're doing, and if they're reporting a lot of distress, helping them to find services can matter.
And you found four basic classifications of this post-traumatic stress, ways that it can affect kids. Could you talk to us about that?
Sure. Overall, the good news is that most children are resilient in that they don't report many symptoms of distress after disasters. So we had one pattern that we found of reactions for children after disasters that we called low decreasing. And what that means is children reported low symptoms that generally decreased over time. And 34% of our roughly 1,700 children fell in that pattern of low decreasing. And what that means is these were children who initially presented as not having much distress after the disaster, and that didn't change over time. So they had low symptoms, and those symptoms stayed low over time. And that's really good news because it tells us that, on the whole, children, many of them, are not going to report that many symptoms. So if you see a child who isn't reporting too many symptoms, you can take that at face value for the most part. I definitely check in with them. Sometimes we find adults will say, well, there must be something wrong. This was a horrible event. How can they be fine? But we're finding that is a natural pattern of response that children and adults have to these traumatic events, that many children and adults do report feeling all right and not being too distressed after a big event. But we did find a small minority of children who reported what we call chronic symptoms. And this was 10% of our children in our study. 10% reported chronic symptoms that were elevated and high and causing them a lot of distress after the disaster. And this is a really important small group of children to pay attention to, because that 10% is telling us that these are children who were very distressed and who did need some more intensive help. The good news for the children who were in that chronic 10% is that we have great interventions to help alleviate children's symptoms of post-traumatic stress. But the key issue here is that we need to get these children help. And our best treatments for post-traumatic stress are led by trained professionals who have expertise in this area.
And what are delayed trajectories, and what did your study find out about them in these four storm cases?
Delayed trajectories are trajectories where you don't see many symptoms at first. People appear to be doing all right, and then they sort of have a breakdown where more symptoms show up later. We call that a delayed trajectory in that the symptoms have a delayed start in terms of appearing. But the thing is, we did not observe a delayed trajectory among children. And this is different from what we typically see in adults after disasters. In adults, we do see delayed trajectories. We didn't observe that in our study of children. And this is actually great news, because it means that if we can assess early, screen, and ask children how they're doing, then that we can sort of take at face value, that we're not going to accidentally miss children that will show up way later. But it's also a call to action. It means that we do need to assess early, because those early symptoms that children report tell us a lot about how children will do over time.
And looking at your other work, I have to ask, do these hurricanes possibly affect mothers as well as their kids?
Absolutely. And we do see that mothers are very much impacted. And I think you can see echoes of this in the current pandemic as well. You know, mothers can be impacted on multiple levels, and really needing support is important. And when we think about disaster events, oftentimes schools are shut for an extended period of time. I think about after Hurricane Katrina, there were about 196,000 public school students who had to change schools in Louisiana. So that's a lot of students that had to change schools. But you think, too, about mothers, fathers, other caregivers who were also impacted, because any of us who are parents know that you cannot work when your child cannot go to school.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, too, of mass social events like the Great Depression or a world war. There's a kind of social support and recognition for distressed people that follows. But I wonder, does that happen after hurricanes? Do kids feel like they're left on their own to cope?
People are incredibly supportive and really come together after disasters. And for children, for the most part, they report that it is helpful that they know that others have gone through similar experiences, so they have people to talk with. But I think really reaching out to children and asking them how they're doing is important, because what we find a lot of times is that adults assume that children are reacting in the way that the adult themselves is reacting. And that doesn't actually indicate how a child might be feeling. In our research, when we look at reports of how an adult thinks a child is doing and compare that to how a child reports that they're doing, those two reports have a very low correlation. They're almost not related at all. But what is related is how the adult thinks the child is doing and how the adult themselves reports that they are doing. I know that's kind of confusing and convoluted, but what that means is the adult's report really matches their own report of how they're doing, not how the child themselves is doing. So all of that tells us how important it is to hear from children themselves. And they are good at being able to tell adults about their symptoms and what they're going through.
That is really illuminating. Ask the kids how they're doing. You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is Dr. Betty Lai, psychologist and specialist in children's mental health following natural disasters. And, of course, that is key during climate change. Betty, what are some of the symptoms parents or educators look to know whether their children might need urgent help after a disaster?
Paying attention to distress and in any what we call impairments in functioning. So if your child is not able to do things that they were able to do before the disaster event itself, that is a good sign that it would be good to check in with somebody. And it's always great to check in with people who are experts in development, teachers. Teachers see a lot of children, and they'll be really well positioned to understand how other children are reacting to the same event. So keeping those lines of communication open is really important.
In one of your many studies over the last decade, you flagged an increase in sedentary behavior as part of PTSS. Or what does that mean? What does that look like in a child?
That could look like spending a lot of time playing video games, spending a lot of time watching TV, not really getting up and getting out of the house. So sedentary behavior is definitely an area that you want to pay attention to and that we've found is related to mental health. And some of the best ways to create positive mental health are to keep a child active. Now, this is really hard in a disaster because we know that playgrounds can get flooded or destroyed, for example. When we were in Galveston, after Hurricane Ike, the school gyms weren't able to be repaired for a long time, and the gyms were being used for things like lunches because other areas of the building were under repair. So I want to forefront that issue because it is so important to pay attention to, but oftentimes activities like physical activity, the opposite of sedentary activity, oftentimes those sort of are put lower on the priority list, but our work is showing that those activities are so important for children's mental health. So we really need to think about that early on in terms of thinking about disaster recovery.
Are there implications leading from climate-driven disasters to more coping with drugs, alcohol, or even higher suicide rates in young people following a natural disaster like a hurricane?
That's a great question, Alex. We don't know the answer definitively for children. We have seen in adults that disasters are absolutely related to more negative health behaviors, including things like smoking or drug use. We did look at children after the Haiti earthquake, and we found that there was some relationship between having gone through the earthquake and later health behaviors, like the number of sexual partners that youth had, for example.
Well, that's understandable in a way. I mean, it happens during wartime as well. But I'm wondering, too, if a child is traumatized, and we know not all kids are. In fact, a minority of kids are going to have lasting damage from these things. But what happens when, as we know will happen in the future, we have more storms and repetitive heat waves and possibly floods that keep coming?
Yeah, I think you're raising such an important point, and one that we can predict. We can now plan for the fact that many children will experience one of these traumatic events in their lifetime. And given that, it only makes sense to really think about preventive care. What can we do now to help children prepare for the next event? And that really means focusing on social emotional functioning. So helping children have skills for coping with their emotions and having positive coping strategies, like being able to talk about their emotions, being able to identify things that help them feel better, how to bolster their social support and draw on friends and caring adults in their lives. And those are all skills that are helpful generally in life, but are especially important after you experience a big event like a disaster.
Well, I noticed your study used information and contacted the kids through schools, and I began wondering, well, I guess schools are supposed to be part of the solution to those kids that need help from PTSS after disaster. But then I'm thinking, well, right now during the pandemic, those schools are closed. So if we get a hurricane and schools are closed, we could have trouble dealing with all this.
Absolutely. And all of this points to how central schools are in children's lives, and in a really good way. You know, as just a data point on this, when we looked at, and this wasn't my work, but work of other researchers, you know, they looked at children after Hurricane Katrina. And there was a nonprofit that was started that offered sort of our gold standard treatment for post-traumatic stress symptoms to children who were reporting distress. So they offered them this treatment for free in the community and in schools. There were sort of two options that you had. When children were referred out to the community, far fewer children actually took up those services, even though they were reporting distress. So only 37% of children accessed services when they were located offsite, outside of school. But when those services were offered in schools, 98% of children and families took up the services. So just that simple shift of where services were located made a huge difference for children and families. And keep in mind that services were free in both conditions.
Well, it looks like we're coming into tumultuous times with a climate shifting. Can you think of ways that parents listening can help prepare their children to deal with possible impacts if their kids get PTSS?
I think in order to prepare, I think there are a few things that parents could do right away. And one is a very simple strategy of monitoring the news that children are exposed to. Especially in disaster events, you know, there can be sort of a 24-hour news cycle of a lot of disaster reporting. And research does show that that is predictive of distress for children. So even just watching something happening on the news can cause distress for children. So if parents can keep the TV off and make sure that they know and have pre-screened what's happening on the news, can be really helpful for children. Another strategy is coming up in advance. If you're in a disaster-prone area, making sure you know what your evacuation plan is really important, and also knowing what your evacuation plan is for your pets. A lot of times, pets are sort of forgotten until later, and that becomes really problematic if you have to evacuate quickly. And we know from the work on bushfires that you mentioned earlier, concern about pets and what's happened to them is actually a major predictor of children reporting post-traumatic stress symptoms after disaster. So monitoring the news, thinking about your evacuation plans and your pets are really important. And then also making sure that you are helping to bolster a child's social support network is something that you can do right now, even regardless of whether you might experience a disaster. Social supports are so important for children, and they really help them through these potentially traumatic events.
Dr. Betty Lai, do you think the experience of children during natural disasters is getting enough attention?
I think there's growing focus on how these events can impact children. And the pandemic actually is really highlighting how important and central schools are for children's mental health. I feel strongly that there could always be more attention and more investment in children's mental health through schools. As an example, we don't have enough school counselors in this country, in the U.S., where I'm based right now. You know, the American School Counselor Association recommends that school counselors have a caseload of 250 students, but there are only two states in the United States that meet that ratio. And those two states happen to be pretty rural, so they have a lower student population. So for the most part, school counselors in the United States have far more students than they should have, than is recommended. And that does matter because we find that when school counselors have high caseloads, the children in those schools are less likely to finish high school, go to college, get good grades, basically all of the outcomes that we care about for children. So really focusing more attention and funding towards school counseling is one major preventive act that we could all take right now to help children.
Yes, I wish we'd done that already, because now coming back from the pandemic, a lot of kids are going to need our help as well. Now, the study we've been talking about looked at kids in the United States, but the whole world is experiencing unstable weather as the climate shifts. Is there much international work in this field, and can developing countries really do much to help their kids struggling after disasters?
The short answer is that we need more research in all countries to understand these issues. We recently put out a paper looking at the international guidelines for post-traumatic stress, and we really emphasized how we have limited information on low- and middle-income countries and how traumatic events are impacting children. In the case of disasters, that's really worrisome and a key gap that we need to address with research, because we know that disaster events can have an even greater impact in low and middle income countries. So we definitely need more work across the board internationally.
Betty, what brought you to this work?
I am a former school teacher myself, and I've always been really interested in how we can support children through all of life events. But I was a graduate student in Miami, where there are a lot of hurricanes that happen. But the first major piece that brought me to this work, I think, was the fact that Hurricane Ike hit Galveston, Texas, which was a location that I'd actually spent my childhood summers at. So that felt really close to home for me, and I really wanted to understand how we could help the community recover from a big event like a hurricane.
We have been speaking with Dr. Betty Lai, assistant professor at Boston College, trained clinical psychologist, expert on children's mental health following natural disasters. You can find links to learn more in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Betty, thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Thank you for having me, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.